The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. As we head into Hour 3, it's a delight to have with us Congressman John Shattuck. He formerly represented Arizona's old 4th Congressional District, part of the famed class of 1994, former chairman of the Republican Study Committee. John, how are you today, sir?
I'm great and glad to be here.
Great for you to be here. Thank you. Great to have you here. John, I'm looking around the country. I want to get into some of the more recent polling in a few minutes on the presidential sweepstakes. But first, looking at what's going on across the country with our campuses. John, is our country okay?
I'm not at all sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Go with that thought, as Bob Newhart would say.
I actually think we're in deep trouble.
Yeah.
As a nation.
Yeah.
It seems to me like each generation of Americans, yours and mine for one, and then this generation in addition, isn't confronted with any, or many of them are not confronted with any serious challenges in life. And so they engage in dalliances, mm-hmm. and they just don't get serious or focused.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people talk about the great generation being the generation that confronted World War II. And then our generation came along and we had to work, but a fair number of us had a fairly easy life. And so we went off to college, and at least a fair number of them in college had time to demonstrate against the Vietnam War and saw no reason not to, notwithstanding that those demonstrations clearly did damage.
Mm-hmm.
But at least those demonstrations were directed at the direct conduct of the government and its drafting of young men and women. And then, I guess they didn't draft women, but drafting men and then sending them off to war. And the protesters challenged the appropriateness of that war, but Americans were dying in that war.
Yeah.
Now we have students around the country who have decided that they aren't busy enough in their normal lives not to throw themselves into a cause, and so they want to throw themselves into the cause. And in this instance, they've decided to throw themselves into the cause of terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
There is no doubt but that Hamas and Hezbollah and these other groups are, in fact, terrorists. And there are a long list of others sponsored by Iran. And so they have a dispute with our federal government, but they think they can destroy public property and interfere with the function of the institutions that they're attending, for example, and pay no price.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I happen to disagree with the federal government about many things it's doing right now. One of them is I think we're breaking our word to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
When we promised, when they surrendered their nuclear weapons, we promised that we would defend them. And now we are not only, and we signed an agreement that we would defend them, we're not only not defending them, we aren't even arming them, which is all they've asked. And ask for our soldiers and sailors and Marines and Air Force personnel, they've just asked for the weapons. They said they'll defend themselves, and we're not living up to that. But just because I'm very unhappy with what the government's doing and that it's degrading the trustworthiness of our nation by the way it's treating Ukraine, I'm not out there protesting and interfering with the ability of people to go about their lives here in the United States, or requiring the police to come try to protect property because of my conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And yet these kids feel entitled to do exactly that. So I think we're in grave trouble.
It's interesting. There's a parallel here, or at least one worth examining a little bit now that you bring up Ukraine, because you had a slight resistance that grew into a slightly stronger resistance to supporting Ukraine. I think it started, what, in 2022, February of 2022, I think, when Russia invaded. And Joe Biden made a very big deal of how evil Russia and Putin were, Vladimir Putin is, and there was some resistance. You did not see campus protests. You did not see major protests against Vladimir Putin. In fact, I don't remember seeing college campus protests anything like this since Vietnam. You make the interesting point that we at least had soldiers and boots in Vietnam and Americans dying on behalf of Vietnam. Here, in an odd twist of the parallel, we have American hostages being held and students protesting and marching on behalf of the organization holding American hostages. In other words, they've all become Jane Fondas in a way. And they're getting the same kind of right. Yeah, they've become Jane Fondas, and in the same way that the North Vietnamese praised Jane Fonda, you have the president of Iran, Ibrahim Raisi, praising the protests on the campus, and it doesn't cause these students or their teachers, their professors are out there with them. It doesn't give them a pang of conscience, John.
One would think that that compliment would have caused them to say, stop.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, wait. What? Right. What?
Am I actually supporting the opposition? Because I think most of the Vietnam War protesters, and by most I mean virtually all, said we shouldn't be in Vietnam, we should get out of Vietnam. But they didn't step forward and say North Vietnam is righteous, mm-hmm. and North Vietnam is wrong. And what the United States is doing is wrong. So they have decided to kind of cross the Rubicon and say, it's not just that I don't want our money spent there. It's that we are engaged in bad conduct. Mm-hmm. And I think that's based on a gross misunderstanding of the Middle East, and specifically of Israel and Palestine, and Palestine's role in or Palestinians' role in the Middle East and in constantly attacking Israel. I read an article just the other day that the Palestinians attacked Israel in like five times or seven times prior to this.
Yeah.
And each time Israel stopped them, and each time after stopping them, Israel stopped short of doing anything more.
Right.
And here they are again.
Right.
So these students apparently are saying, are explicitly saying Israel is wrong, and it's appropriate for Palestine to attack and kill Israelis, and it's appropriate for Palestine to say death to Israel, and for the Palestinians to say death to America, because mm-hmm. America is siding with Israel. So I don't think any of the Vietnam protesters would have said, we agree with the sentiment, death to America.
They wouldn't have said, yeah.
These students are.
Yeah, that's right. They wouldn't have said America shouldn't exist from the Atlantic to the Pacific.
Right.
They wouldn't have said that, and they weren't saying that. And that's what that's what makes this notion of a two-state solution, which is kind of the diplomatic dream palace, I suppose. The dream of the diplomats and the State Department and Foggy Bottom has always been a two-state solution. That is to say, a Palestinian state alongside an Israeli state. The protesters aren't saying that. They're saying no Israel.
Well, maybe to bring it, yes, no Israel. Maybe to bring it home, it is as if Canada were saying the United States is, or Mexico, or both of them, The United States is an illegitimate nation.
Right.
That nation was Indian country or belonged to others before the United States and before Christopher Columbus. The United States was created and before Christopher Columbus crossed the Atlantic. And so we in Mexico and we in Canada believe that we should destroy America and wipe it off the face of the map so it doesn't exist. The United States doesn't exist. And we are American students who agree with those who say the United States shouldn't exist. And that's pretty extreme.
Let me hold you right there, take a quick commercial break, and come back and pick up on that. John Shattuck is my guest. He and I will be right back. Congressman John Shattuck is my guest, S-H-A-D-E-G-G. He is the head of Shattuck & Associates, LLC, consulting law firm. John, Congressman, there's another element to this that's kind of interesting, and I'm glad you brought back some of the Vietnam analogs here, the Vietnam protest analogs. If you look at the literature on the campuses, if you look at the organizations that are sponsoring and helping publicize and promote these protests and riots, a lot of them have variations of socialism and communism in them. The socialist organizations, communist organizations, they say it. They have pictures of Karl Marx, etc. Now, in the 70s, when you were coming of age, this would have equally been intolerable here. I think the Democratic Party, for example, resented tremendously ever having an association with or being labeled in league or in sync or in sympathy with anything socialist, communist. And it was a very rare thing. I mean, I don't think people could get jobs, really, if they claimed to be socialists or communists, not by law, but by distaste. And yet, that's another element of what's going on here, too, about how things have changed. I opened up our interview asking you if America's all right. You said you weren't at all sure. I think that's a great answer. This is another emblem of that, isn't it? The normalization of socialism and communism.
Absolutely. I mean, even when I was in Congress, which is now 13 years ago, I guess, there were very, very, very few members of Congress or even average Americans who would say that they believed Marxism, communism, or even socialism were legitimate philosophies worthy of emulation.
Right.
I think that that was a handful of people inside Congress, less than a handful, even those who were. And there were some in Congress when I was there who would say, yep, I'm a Marxist. But they would only say that openly if they were pressed, because they kind of, even they themselves were embarrassed about it.
Yep.
They wanted it known to people who agreed with them, but they didn't necessarily want it known by the vast majority of the people in the country, because they go, what?
Mm-hmm.
They would have been shocked.
Mm-hmm.
and concerned. Today, if you stand up and say openly, I'm a socialist, that is not immediately viewed upon askance as being out of step with the norm in America. They say, oh, really? What's interesting? That's interesting. Why?
Yeah.
and then it gets interesting. But
right.
I think you're absolutely right that culture has changed in America. And sometimes people ask me all the time, don't you miss being there?
Yeah.
And I pretty much say no. And they say, well, why? And I say, well, I love the fight, but I don't know if I really would want to serve with as many hard left, openly socialist or further to the left members, because I can't imagine embracing a philosophy that has been proven, or a philosophy different, close in the same genre, that many different philosophies, those three that have proven themselves, they failed. I can't imagine embracing them. You look at what has happened in Russia. You look at Russia today. If you speak out today in Russia and criticize the war, Putin has his goons come get you. Now, maybe not if you say it once, but if you say it three times, they do. So how can you admire Putin's communism? I mean, it's clearly totalitarianism. And the same is true of Xi Jinping. You know, you're not allowed to speak out in those societies. They are repressive, totalitarian societies, and yet an American member of the United States Congress can say, yeah, I think we ought to be doing what they're doing in North Korea. We ought to have that philosophy. Or I think we ought to have the guiding philosophy of Xi Jinping and China, the Communist Party of China. And you say, what? I mean, are you even competent? Do you have any clue what's going on? You know, have you ever heard of the Uyghurs and what's happening to them? So it is hard. I'm not sure I would enjoy being in Congress with people that are that far out of step with what America is and why it was founded and what it stands for and the bounty it has produced.
You make an interesting point, and let me see if I'm picking this up correctly. When you served up and against Democrats who you assumed, you know, had a shared idea of the principles of this nation. And what you had were different opinions. Jefferson has that great equation in his first inaugural. Not every difference of opinion is a difference of principle, right? We are all Federalists.
Right.
We are all Democrats. And the two parties at the time. And now, if you serve in Congress, and maybe this explains the division, and people, you know, complain that there's not – people complain there's too much divisiveness in Congress, there's not enough ability to do bipartisan work. But maybe that's why. Maybe it's because you can no longer, as a Republican, much less, I suppose, a moderate Democrat, go to Congress, go to the Senate even – and assume that you're all operating off the same set of principles. You have to do remedial work. You have to argue up and over and against, hopefully over, but up and against and hopefully over contrarian philosophies, not contrarian ideas about how to accomplish a philosophy you all share. It's really remedial work you would be sent there to do. And who – I certainly don't have the patience for that.
Exactly. Absolutely, exactly. When I was there, most of the differences weren't over what the goal was. They were over how to achieve the goal.
Right.
So if we wanted all Americans to do well, Republicans would say, well, the way to do that is to create a booming economy which benefits everyone. And I think in many ways, Trump did that. And as proof of it, minorities did better under Trump as president than they had ever done in the past.
Right.
So we would say we can help all Americans, including the lower levels of America, the poor and the minorities, by creating a booming economy. And the Democrats would say, yeah, we want to help all Americans, but the way we think to do it is not to create a booming economy, a society that was economically growing year after year, but instead what we want to do is take money basically from the productive and give it to the unproductive.
Yeah.
And so it was not over what was good. It was over what was how to achieve that on health care. Or pick any other topic, but healthcare was one I cared about. My view is that Americans should be allowed to make their own decisions and not have either the government or the insurance industry take those decisions away from them and make them for them.
Hold that thought right there. Let me pick up on that when we come right back. John Shattuck and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Congressman John Shattuck, my guest. John, talking about that kind of remedial work that you would need to engage in if you wanted to, you know, start restoring this country, the remedial work of being in Congress and debating not Democrats with a liberal philosophy, but socialists with a left-wing philosophy, it's an entirely different thing. Ilhan Omar and that whole progressive squad, of which there are 100 members. People think it's like four or five. There's 100 members in the Progressive Caucus. It's not Tip O'Neill.
And at least, I think, if I'm not mistaken, at least two from Arizona.
Yeah, that's right.
No, Raul Grijalva is
right
ahead of it.
Yep.
One of the heads, or was,
yep,
and I think he's been chairman,
yep,
for quite a while.
Yeah, Gallego.
And I,
Ruben Gallego, yeah.
Ruben Gallego, in that case, then there's three, because
okay,
I think the former mayor, Greg Stanton, is a member. Now, maybe he's not. I don't know.
The idea
but
that
in any case, there are at least two.
Yeah, well, the idea that he might be is, and we'll check, but the idea that he might very well be is itself an issue, and an interesting one in and of itself. The idea that he might be indicates that it's very mainstream for the Democratic Party to be part of this 100-member, 100-person caucus, which is half of the Democrats. Effectively, half of the Democrats are in league with the socialist movement in Congress. Now, you said a lot in our very first segment at the beginning of this hour, and one of the things, one of the threads I wanted to pick up on was how you were talking about, you know, the different generations of America and how, you know, since World War II, they've kind of unfolded in what we kind of came to expect and accept and in some cases just kind of inherit as givens, the postulates, if you will, about what America stood for and what America was. I wonder if you might even compare it to inherited generational wealth, the concept,
right,
that, you know, by the third or fourth generation of someone who hasn't really worked, hasn't really done much except operate with their trust fund of three or four generations going, you know, they tend to be they tend to be characters of low value and low quality, to put it no higher. You know what I'm talking about. And
yep.
And I wonder if that's kind of happened with America, too. Dennis Prager says the greatest generation gave their children their wealth, but not their morals.
Interesting phraseology. I mean, I think that's correct. And generations after that keep giving their,
right, less their and le- right, yeah,
children's, yeah, more and more money and
less and less,
less and less principles,
right,
or morals.
Yeah,
I want to go back for a minute,
sure,
to the kind of the difference between Democrats and Republicans, and make it very clear. In the healthcare debate, I don't believe when we were having it, and in the lead up to Obamacare, I wrote a number of bills. I wrote one for Speaker Hastert at his request, and I wrote a modified version of that, which I introduced. And both his bill and my bill, the bill I wrote for him and the bill I introduced myself, we accepted and agreed to the premise that all Americans should have health care.
Sure.
And have access to the necessary basics of health care. And in my legislation, so we said, look, we don't want anybody dying because they don't have the money to pay for health care. So the way mine was written and the way Speaker Hastert's was written, the government would pay for everyone who couldn't afford basic health care themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the debate wasn't, do we let people die for lack of affordable or lack of any health care? Remember, the fight was not over what. So we accepted their premise that people who weren't gifted by God with the ability to take care of themselves,
mm-hmm,
Or couldn't find work and couldn't take care of themselves, meaning they couldn't buy health insurance, would be cared for by the rest of society.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't propose to go back to what America was at its founding, where you made it or didn't make it,
right,
based on your own skills,
right,
period, end,
right,
of discussion.
Right.
And that was Hastert's bill, and that was my bill. In exchange, and mine even said you would be afforded essentially a health care policy upon birth, and if you wound up going into a hospital for care at some point in your life, and it turns out you had never worked and never collected on that health care. You showed up at a hospital. Today, that hospital is forced by the government to pay for that care.
That's right.
And it shifts that off, that burden to not to the government.
Yep.
It shifts that burden to other health insurance people who have health insurance.
Okay.
So your health insurance, a chunk of your premium pays for your care, but a chunk of your premium, if you examine it carefully, pays for the person who can't pay for their care. And I think we are willing to accept, Republicans, conservatives are willing to accept, yep, we're willing to help pay for the others in society who can't care for themselves. That's kind of been America's position from the beginning. You know, your neighbor who moved in and needed to build his barn was going to compete with you. He was going to raise the same grain or wheat that you were, or the same milk cows that you were, and you still went over and helped him. So the issue wasn't, are we willing to pay? The issue is, how is the issue administered, or how do we do that?
Exactly.
And I'll explain that.
Okay, yeah, we'll do that on the other side of the break. John Shattuck and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Congressman John Shattuck, my guest. John, you're talking about health care, and it's interesting you're doing so, and I'm glad you're doing so. It used to poll as a top concern. We got the Affordable Health Care Act, the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare, and really nothing, not that much has been done about it since. Donald Trump made some revisions, which were, I think, helpful, including removing the tax penalty on it. But it's funny. It's just not spoken about much anymore. And anyway, you were talking about, you know, the kind of go ahead. Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah. Just to finish the earlier thought.
Yeah.
What my legislation did, if you were disabled or you were poor and couldn't afford the health care, they would look you up and look up your Social Security number, and they would say, oh, yeah, a policy has been established to cover your care. We'll care for you at the hospital today, and we'll build that fund of money that the government has been putting money into in your name mm-hmm. since your birth, and that'll pay the bill. But in exchange for that, those who were paying taxes to cover those expenses were free to get health care as they chose. They didn't have to take government health care, and they didn't. They could enter into a free market and buy health care on their own rather than be in their employer's market, because your employer doesn't know what health care you really need. So everybody got health. Everybody was able to get health care. Those who couldn't pay for it had it paid for, but the people who were productive in society had the freedom to design and buy a policy that suited their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't about whether we were going to provide care. It was, are we going to preserve freedom, or are we going to force people into the government system? And the point I would make is nobody's talking about Obamacare or the AHCA and that issue anymore, except here's the point. The cost of health care has continued to go up, but nobody talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
So now they passed it on the claim that it would save money, and it's not saving money. The cost of health care is still going up. What it is doing, and you can ask a doctor about this, is that if prior to Obamacare, 80% of the physicians were in their own practices where they knew they had to take care of their patients. It was a personal connection with their patients,
mm-hmm.
and they had to be responsive to their patients.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of those doctors have been bought out, and their practices are owned by the stock market. Stock market investors own a huge amount of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or insurance companies. They now own doctor practices or hospitals. So what has happened is the bureaucracy over and above the doctor,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, that bureaucracy often orders the doctor around.
Yeah.
There's even an additional layer between the patient, who's the consumer, and the provider, the doctor, because now his practice isn't owned by him or her practice. Mm-hmm. It's owned by a fund created in the stock market. Of course, the fund created in the stock market has to show a profit, or nobody will buy that stock.
Right.
So quality of care, if you ask the average And doctors are still trying to provide the same amount of quality care. But if you ask them about their employer, they'll grumble and say, well, my employer only cares about profit. He doesn't care about how happy my patients are.
That's right. That's right.
So it's a so the difference is the Democrats, everybody agrees everybody should have health care, but the Democrats want it to come from the government, and the conservatives want it to come from the private sector that the actual consumer can control.
Right. Right. And isn't it interesting still that we're just, I mean, I guess this is how it works here in America now with the left. They got about 90%+ of what they wanted in health care reform, and we argued about it for a couple of years, and we've moved on. You do not hear a lot of candidates talking about this anymore. It's almost another fait accompli. It's almost another reinstantiation of the New Deal, something
exactly.
You just can't touch or talk about.
I had lawyers that I've been in practice with at big firms who say to me, the American people aren't capable of making decisions about their own care.
Sure.
And only the government can do that for us.
Yeah.
And to me, that is insanity. But of course, if you're a socialist or a communist or a Marxist, you love that because that's government control. And, of course, the bottom line of their belief is they know better how to run your life than you do.
We saw it with government doctors, Dr. Birch, Dr. Redfield, Dr. Fauci. We saw it. People loved having them in charge, loved it.
So you're smart enough to buy everything else you buy in life, including insuring your car and your house and creating your retirement plan, but you can't control your own health care. The only entity capable of controlling health care is the government. And oh, by the way, we, the government, will save money when we do it. And in point of fact, they're spending more money.
And
they're driving the provider of the service further and further away from the recipient of the service.
Yes. And
all of us have met, or at least I've met, a number of people who ran into health care problems in Canada. And got sick of it and moved their residency to the United States.
Yep. But the areas in which the government wants to continue to reach are increasing. You're smart enough right now. You're smart enough right now to buy certain things. But
the move
on transportation, the move on energy, the move on the temperature of your house and the amount of water in your toilet or shower head, they are moving on all of that.
They're moving on every – and people don't even see it.
No.
For example,
right.
The government is – I have a gas furnace in my home.
Yep.
I have a gas furnace in my home because I knew enough to know that a gas furnace is more efficient in producing heat than a heat pump.
Yep.
So I put in a gas furnace.
Yep.
Now the government has a policy that says, no, in the future we're not allowed people to have gas furnaces. The worst situation is – I have a standalone refrigeration system, not a heat pump. And the truth is, talk to any heat pump repairman who knows this stuff and ask him if a heat pump is more efficient in producing air conditioning than the alternative. And he'll say, no,
yeah.
No, it's less efficient.
Yeah. John Shattuck, God bless you. I love checking in with you, brother. You're the best. We'll talk soon.
Glad to do it.
Thank you, John.
My pleasure.
You got it. Portions of this show brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. With YRefi, you are offered a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio, but YRefi puts flexibility and control in your hands. You can take income or not. You can compound your income, whatever you like. And with YRefi, there are absolutely no fees and no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. With YRefi, you get a monthly statement. Of course, with no surprises, but best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return with YRefi, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Check them out and invest, YRefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then REFY.com, or give them a call at 888-YRefi-24. You can also visit them in person. They're headquartered here locally. Offices right on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. I've been there any number of times. You don't get a sales pitch. You won't be asked to sign a thing. But if not, check them out online, investyrefi.com. I suppose one of the things one has to conclude about a conversation like I just had with Congressman Shattuck is that we can bewail and complain how bad our political conditions are. But we have to appreciate that there's a lot of people, a lot, perhaps nearly half our fellow countrymen, and on any given day, maybe more, who don't see it that way, who don't see it the way we do, who are very much invested in and happy with a heavy hand of government, very much invested in and unmoved by the fact that the Democratic Party has embraced so much of socialist doctrine and indeed has members of Congress who openly affiliate with the Democratic Socialists of America. We have to appreciate, not in the sense of liking, but in the sense of accepting, maybe that's the better word. We have to accept the fact that we have remedial work to do. It's not enough to say the economy is X or so many people can't find work or the housing market is out of reach or prices are out of control or our foreign policy is laughable. It's not enough to do that anymore. We can't have, we are no longer in a realm where we can have those policy debates. We have to have ideological education. It's not about policy anymore. It's about ideology. I'm Seth Leibson. On behalf of David Dahl and Mr. Bill and Teresa, I want to thank you all for being with us. Until tomorrow, God bless you all. Class dismissed.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.